This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Back in Grandma's day, if you cut your finger, it became infected. You could die from that scratch. Then came penicillin, the age of wonder drugs, and we were safe. Well, not anymore. Disease specialists are warning that with the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, we are about to return to those good old days before antibiotics, when people just died of simple infections. Our antibiotics just don't work anymore in many cases. And drug companies, well, they're not really interested in developing new ones because an antibiotic will cure your infection, and then they lose you as a customer. Why spend all that money when they could sink it into highly profitable drugs that treat chronic illnesses that don't go away, like erectile dysfunction, restless leg syndrome? Ask your doctor. You say you do care about dying from an infection you pick up on the street or in a hospital. How can we preserve the antibiotics we still have and push for new ones? There is hope and new leads in research, and that's what we're going to be talking about this hour. Our number 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK, or you can tweet us at SciFry. Let me introduce my guests. Dr. Martin Blaser is the author of Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues. You can read an excerpt at sciencefriday.com/missingmicrobes on our website there. He's also director of the Human Microbiome Program at New York University School of Medicine, and he's here in our New York studios at CUNY. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Great to be here.
Dr. Tom Frieden is director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. He joins us from our studio there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Frieden.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. Let me begin the questions with you, Dr. Frieden. As head of the CDC monitoring the U.S., how bad is antibiotic resistance growing?
Antimicrobial resistance is one of the biggest health threats of our time. It's a ticking time bomb. We have the potential of being in a post-antibiotic era. In fact, we already are for some patients and some organisms. The good news is that we really can turn this around. There are things that we can do today with existing tools that'll make a really big difference. We need to continue to discover new things, new drugs, new things about the microbiome that Marty is working on, but we can use the tools we have in our hands today to make a huge difference.
Give me an example of some of those tools.
One of the most important ones is improving the way we use antibiotics in hospitals. At CDC, we work with virtually every hospital in the country to improve stewardship of antibiotics, and we're now recommending that every single hospital have a hospital stewardship program. We know that these programs can save lives and save money, but to do them well isn't easy. Hospitals need to track all of the antibiotic prescriptions. They need to track what the patterns of both antibiotic use and antimicrobial resistance are so that they're getting the best treatment for the patients in their care. And that type of program can make a big difference. We're confident that this can be turned around.
But aren't 80% of the antibiotics given to animals what we're going to eventually eat?
We want to make sure that wherever antibiotics are used, they're used rationally. That includes hospitals, nursing homes, outpatient clinics, pediatrician offices, and the agricultural sector.
Tom, where do you come? Martin, where do you come down on this?
First, I agree completely with Tom, and I'm very pleased that the CDC is taking such an active role in this. There are so many different aspects of it, and part of the issue is that because antibiotics are so miraculous, we just think there's no cost. And as a profession, as doctors, the public at large doesn't think there's cost. But we've known since the earliest days that every time you use antibiotics, you increase the risk of resistance. So one of the things that's driving the terrible resistance that Tom is talking about is the massive overuse of antibiotics in the hospital, in the farm, in the outpatient area, where most of the antibiotics in the United States in people are used as well.
You were president of the Infectious Disease Society of America, and you testified in Congress about antibiotic development. How did that go?
Well, I, without talking so much about the procedures in Congress, which are peculiar to say the least, eventually they heard the message that the professional societies were saying that the pipeline of new antibiotics is running dry. We have to create new antibiotics. Otherwise, we're going to face the kind of problem that Tom is talking about, mm-hmm. and that I also talk about in Missing Microbes, plagues that we will not be able to treat with antibiotics.
Tom, you talked about that we are already in the age of antibiotics, post-antibiotic era. Why shouldn't production of antibiotics, which would serve to protect hundreds of millions of Americans, why should that not be as high a topic of national security? Why is it worth anything less than security from terrorism, cyber warfare, nuclear attack? If hundreds of millions of people are threatened by loss of antibiotics, why shouldn't we have our own system where we make sure that there are new antibiotics happening?
Well, on the one hand, we absolutely need to figure out ways to incentivize and support private industry so that they will make new drugs. But at the same time, we urgently need to make better use of the drugs we've got, because just making new drugs and then losing those two, that's not going to solve the problem for us. We need to improve our use of drugs, and there are a few things that we can do that'll make a really big difference. One of them is to track what's happening better than we do now. We don't know well enough where these organisms are spreading, how they're spreading, and second, we're not intervening rapidly enough when there are outbreaks. And third, we're not preventing as effectively as we could. And if we do those three things better, track them better, stop outbreaks better, and prevent better, we can preserve these antibiotics so they'll be around for our children and our grandchildren. And if we have new ones also, that'll be even better.
Why is it if we have new ones? Why isn't it when we have new ones?
It's not so simple. The process of drug discovery is one that's a little bit of a gamble. It may be that there are tons of great new drugs out there to be discovered and used, or it might be that it's getting harder and harder. Whether it's hard or easy, we have to do it. That's clear. But finding new drugs alone isn't going to get us out of this mess.
You know, in part, we're not pricing antibiotics appropriately, because they have been inexpensive to develop and to produce in the past. But to develop the new ones that we really need, it's going to be expensive. It's going to take special programs. Some of the incentives we tried to get through Congress try to make it easier for antibiotics to be developed.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phones. Our number here, if you'd like to join the conversation, 844-724-8255. Sonny in Grand Rapids. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira. You just asked the question about why new antibiotics are not being produced or not coming to market, but it's because there's just no market for them. And the reason I say that is because if a new antibiotic were to come to market, there would be a direction, and appropriately so, that the antibiotic shouldn't be used except in extreme circumstances, meaning there wouldn't be the encouragement to use it to have the volume necessary to pay back the investment required by the drug company to produce it. But the solution to this could be that the government could create a market for a new antibiotic that would treat the types of pathogens that are now becoming resistant to current antibiotics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Congress set aside $5 or $10 billion in an escrow account and said this money will be used to pay for any product, any new antibiotic that meets these specifications, treats these pathogens, it would send drug companies on a race to come up with a product that would meet that need, and then the government would be in charge of how that antibiotic is used.
You sound like you work in the business.
Well, I mean, I'm very low level in the business, but I think we have to be sensible about how we incentivize private industry, which are really the only people that have the skills, the knowledge, and the know-how to bring a new product to market.
Marty Blazer?
I agree. I think we need to think about antibiotics as public goods, just like we think about roads. When we need to build a highway between point A and point B, nobody has enough money to do that. We have to get together, use our tax monies and our tax systems, because if we don't do this public good, then we're going to run out of the kinds of antibiotics. And I agree. On the other hand, we have to control the use of our existing antibiotics, because otherwise we would just be squandering it.
You know, when we say we need new attack helicopters or bombers and things like that, they say, how many do you want? You know, why is there no priority like that, like our caller says, to create a pool of money that's going to go to build the new antibiotics as a prize. It looks like he's talking about offering as a prize. Tom, would this be a good idea?
Well, I would go further. I'd say it's not just about the antibiotics that need to be developed. There are a lot of things that we can do in our health system that will not only save lives, but they'll actually save money. They're best buys. But we have a real challenge in that we're not funded to do them. So through work that we've already done with hospitals around the country, we've been able to drive down some resistant infections substantially and to save hundreds of millions of dollars through those efforts. If we could do similar things with programs to find and stop and prevent resistant infections, we could save billions of dollars for our healthcare system, and more importantly, we could prevent people from getting very serious infections or dying from them.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to jump in, Marty?
I want to just go back to a point that Tom raised, and that is that we need better diagnostics because, for example, when kids come to the doctor with an ear infection, most of those are due to viruses. We know that. Yet most of the time the kids walk out with a prescription for an antibiotic. So if we had a rapid diagnostic that would say this child has a viral infection, this one has a bacterial infection, we could cut down on antibiotic use and thus on resistance. And if we had a diagnostic that could say this child has bacteria A, B, or C, then we could take off the shelf a narrow-spectrum antibiotic to treat A, mm-hmm. B, or C. But we have to develop those. That also should be part of a national program.
Talking with Martin Blaser, author of The Missing Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues. Tom Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk lots more. Take your calls on number 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry or go to our website at sciencefriday.com. And join the discussion over there. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato. We're talking this hour about antibiotic resistance with my guests. Martin Blaser, author of Missing Microbes, is also director of the Human Microbiome Project program at NYU School of Medicine. Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. And we've been discussing, only if we could find an easy way to find new antibiotics. It's not easy to do that. It's not as easy as you think it is. Well, I'd like to bring on another guest who may have found an Achilles heel for bacteria by attacking their ability to join forces together. His research appears in the journal PLOS Pathogens. Bob Hancock is Canada Research Chair and Professor of Microbiology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Hancock.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a thumbnail of what you have discovered here.
So we were working originally with some natural peptides that are found throughout nature. And these peptides were known to have antimicrobial activity against free-swimming bacteria. And we decided to see whether these agents also were useful against bacteria that grow as biofilms. And just to explain to your audience, biofilms are sort of communities of bacteria that sit down on surfaces. And those surfaces can be the skin or the gastrointestinal tract or the lungs. Or a prosthetic device, a hip replacement, or a catheter that is inserted into the individual. And it turns out that actually the CDC has figured out that maybe 65 to 80% of all infections are this sort of biofilm state of bacteria. And what makes biofilms particularly problematic is the fact that by virtue of the way they grow and the way they develop, they become highly resistant to conventional antibiotics, much more resistant than their free-swimming colleagues. So most drug development is done with these free-swimming bacteria rather than the more common form of biofilm found in clinics. So what we did is we decided to screen some of these peptides against which are small proteins, basically, against biofilm bacteria. And what we were able to discover is that a different set of peptides, not the ones that work against the free-swimming bacteria, but ones that a different set are able to work really well against bacteria when they form the biofilm state. So they're specifically suited to treating bacteria in this biofilm state.
And as you say, then that 65 to 80% of the infections are from bacteria in the biofilms. And how successful are they in attacking these bacteria?
Well, they're actually amazing. When we use a conventional antibiotic, like a really common one called ciprofloxacin, we find it requires 100 times the concentration that was used to kill a free-swimming bacteria to kill a biofilm bacteria. When we try these peptides, we find that we can use about tenfold less, or even less than that, to kill these organisms in biofilms. Wow. So we can grow bacteria, really almost any of the major pathogens in our society, as biofilms, and they become specifically sensitive to these anti-biofilm peptides.
So what the peptides, what these proteins do then, is they don't kill the bacteria themselves. They open the door for the antibiotics to get in.
Well, not just that. They also do kill these bacteria in biofilms. So they actually take advantage of this special state of growth called a biofilm growth, where cells, it's a kind of a very crude differentiation process. So where a human embryo cell would turn into a lung cell or a gut cell, in this case, a bacterial cell will turn into a biofilm cell. And in that state, it's completely different. Huh. So it has different, strengths, and it has different weaknesses or things that you can exploit in order to kill them. And it turns out we've just happened to find a way to exploit one of these weaknesses.
So how long will it take for you to test this out, get it approved, get it into the system so that we can actually use it on patients?
So we're lucky that we have excellent funding, in part through the United States National Institutes of Health. And that means that we're fast-tracking, if you like. So we've already gone quite a bit beyond our paper to produce really quite potent molecules. And our plan right now is to try to get into clinical trials within about a year and a half.
Is it desirable to create more fast track then for possible antibiotics?
Absolutely. And the issue that's being raised, biofilms, is a really important one because in modern medicine, we rely very heavily on complex medical devices, endoscopes, humidifiers, dialysis machines, ventilators, and we found outbreaks of disease associated with all of these. So if we do have something that can penetrate the biofilm and be effective despite the biofilm, that can be really helpful. And that's why we at CDC have a biofilm lab that can deconstruct medical devices and environmental reservoirs and find the hotspots where biofilms stick and understand things like how to improve cleaning and disinfection and how to change the devices appropriately or improve the design so that they can be avoided altogether. But absolutely, this could be an important new tool.
Mm-hmm. Marty, do biofilms form in good bacteria also?
Biofilms can be formed by any bacteria, but as Bob and Tom say, this is part of the increasing sophistication and complexity of medical care, and it's why we need antibiotics that work, because as we're trying to do more and more significant things and try to help sicker and sicker people and people with cancer and we transplant organs, we need the umbrella of antibiotics to enable this to actually happen. And it's a great example of how the new techniques require a whole new class of protective agents like these peptide antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I can,
sure.
What Marty mentions now is a really important point. When we think of drug resistance, often we think, well, then pneumonia or urinary infections or cuts and wound infections will be more serious. But what's at stake is much broader than that. What's at stake really is modern medicine, because patients who get specialized care are at really high risk. Patients on cancer chemotherapy or getting surgery for heart disease or joint replacements or organ transplants or dialysis or chronic conditions like rheumatoid arthritis or asthma or multiple sclerosis. These are all people who get treatments that can suppress their immune system, and that suppression can lead to infections quite commonly. We estimate that this year about 600,000 Americans will get cancer chemotherapy, and about 1 in 10 of them, 60,000, will get an infection. Already, too many of those people will die. But if we have much more drug resistance, that number could increase by thousands and thousands. So it's really important that we do two things. First, by all means, let's go all out to find new antibiotics. But let's also go all out to protect the antibiotics we've got. Right now, we know that a lot of the antibiotics being used are unnecessary or inappropriate. And we can save lives and save money by making sure that we have better stewardship of the antibiotics in our hands now. And we have a responsibility to do that. In fact, at CDC, we've made a proposal to Congress to fund a small increase in programs that would help hospitals around the country get a better handle on prescribing and improve the practices, and that's really important. Mm-hmm. It will save lives and save money.
We've heard so many critics of antibiotics use around being everywhere, and so many of the critics have said that there's just a glut. As we say, 80% of the antibiotics are used on animals. Dr. Frieden, is this something you're not allowed to comment on because you work for the government and there's political overtones about recommending not using antibiotics in animals?
No. In fact, the FDA has come out with recommendations. The USDA have come out with recommendations. At CDC, our job is humans. So we focused on this. And if you look at where the most resistant organisms are, right now it's in hospitals, long-term care hospitals, and nursing homes. And that's what we're focusing on. But as I said at the outset, we want to increase rational use of antibiotics in all sectors, human and animal, and for humans, inpatient and outpatient.
Martin Blaser?
Since I don't work for the government, I'm perfectly free to say that we've known for at least 40 years that our use of antibiotics in animals is having adverse health consequences for humans.
In what way?
Investigations from CDC and elsewhere over the years have shown that antibiotics select for resistant organisms in the animals that are used for food production, and these resistant organisms are coming over to humans. Infections that cause a serious disease. So that's an important cost. There's another cost that has been pretty much hidden, and that is that some of the antibiotics themselves are coming over to humans. There are trace residues of antibiotics in meats in the supermarket, in milk that children drink. For some localities, there are antibiotics in their drinking water. These are low levels of antibiotics. We have no idea what the consequences of that are, and it's important for us to study it.
You speculate in your book that it could be causing possibly obesity, diabetes, things that have just popped out of nowhere that we say, where are they coming from? And you say they might be coming from antibiotics.
So that's the central principle of the book, is that we have all these diseases that have risen since World War II. This is the time when antibiotics came on the scene, which are great and miraculous drugs. And my idea has been that antibiotics and other practices have changed the early life microbiome. They've changed how our microbiome develops and how it choreographs immune and metabolic development, leading to such problems as obesity and diabetes and autoimmune diseases. And in fact, the farmers showed us that when you feed antibiotics to young animals, they gain weight. So my hypothesis is that that's what we're doing to our kids.
Obesity in our own kids from antibiotics.
Sorry, I'd like to add a little bit to what Tom said about the idea of using, of trying to preserve the antibiotics we have. So one of the really exciting things about the therapies that we and others have been developing is that we're considering that the world will always need to use antibiotics. And so we're trying to develop new ways of treating infections in the context of antibiotics. And one of the really exciting things about these peptides, perhaps the most exciting thing, which unfortunately is not in the current publication, is that we can actually overcome resistance to antibiotics, just normal resistance to antibiotics. So we can treat a biofilm by a multi-drug resistant pathogen, and we can actually increase the susceptibility of that biofilm, not just to the peptide that we treat it with, but also to conventional antibiotics. So we can lower the effective concentration of these antibiotics by up to 100-fold by treatment with the peptides at the same time.
So you break down their resistance to antibiotics.
So basically the idea is that you're attacking a state of the organism that causes resistance, but at the same time you have the advantage that you're making them more sensitive to the antibiotics we already have available.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking about antibiotic resistance, we have just a few minutes left. There are two topics I want to see if I can get to quickly. One of my favorite topics, and someone who tweeted it in, talked about, G. Grant says, should we be looking into phages, bacterial phages that will attack bacteria? I mean, they've been around. It was pre-World War II. The Soviets were doing a lot of work with that. It fell out of favor when the antibiotics came out. But these are basically, little viruses that attack bacteria. Why don't we do more research on that?
There are people who are doing research on that, and it's one of the options on the table. And there, we can also modify the particles that phage make to attack bacteria. There are studies going on that, in fact, for a company that I'm advising for. So there's a lot of innovation right now. We need to encourage that and incentivize it so that it's economically feasible.
Bob Hancock, I know that one of your colleagues has been experimenting with tweaking the microbiome, which I know is as close to Dr. Blaser's heart also, as a way to prevent infections. Has he been successful on that?
At least with mice, he has. So the idea is that he set up a model of a really feared pathogen called Clostridium difficile, which causes huge problems in hospitals. And Clostridium difficile basically is not really susceptible to antibiotic treatment because it produces toxins that, once they're present within the gut, can cause huge problems to patients. So what he did is he set up this mouse model, and he found that some mice did very well, even though they were given this bacterium Clostridium, and other mice did very poorly. So he took the microbiota, the gut microbiota, from the mice that did very well and fed them to the mice that did very poorly. And by doing that, the mice became completely resistant to this Clostridium. In other words, it's a way of protecting against an infection just using bacteria as a supplement.
Marty Blaser, you're director of the Human Microbiome Project at NYU. What do you think about this potential?
Well, you know, as we've discussed, we know that fecal transplants, which is the movement of large numbers of diverse microbes, are curative for C. diff infection. So the principle is that if you have an altered ecosystem and you restore it with good microbes, you can get improvement. And so there's more and more work to try to hone down on that and figure out what are the active ingredients. Are they a few bacterial species, or is it a particular metabolic pathway? That's another very active area. But the principle has been shown that that you can improve this disease by restoring the ecosystem.
And the microbiome is like unexplored territory.
It's a whole frontier.
Yeah,
we have thousands of species in our gut, but my colleague's been able to demonstrate that just six bacterial species, is enough to protect against Clostridium. So we really can start to go from something which is really complicated, as in fecal transplants, to something that is really highly defined, a very small mixture of bacteria.
You could take a pill, bacterial pill?
I think you could take a pill, and I think it could have an effect, yes.
Those pills are coming.
Okay. Hope. We've ended on hope. I want to thank my guests, Dr. Martin Blaser, author of Missing Microbes, a really interesting book. I would highly recommend it. He's also director of the Human Microbiome Project, the program at the NY School of Medicine. Tom Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Thank you, Dr. Frieden, for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you very much.
And Bob Hancock, Canada Research Chair and Professor of Microbiology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you all for joining us today, and have a great holiday weekend.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.